Good afternoon, and welcome to the Tilray Resolute Concentrated Large Growth Third Quarter 2018 conference call and webinar. All participants will be placed in listen-only mode. After today's presentation, there will be an opportunity to ask questions. Please note, this event is being recorded. I would now like to turn the call over to Nicholas Haffenrafter, Portfolio Manager of the Concentrated Large Growth Strategy. Nicholas, please go ahead.
Thank you. Good afternoon, and thank you for joining us for this update. For those of you with access to our presentation, we're going to review the slides and then take your questions. If you're at your computer, please type your questions into the question box on the webinar control panel. I'm joined today by members of my team, James Bailey, Jeff Lent, John Gallagher, and Brian Zaczynski. On this call, we'd like to give a few brief overview of our firm and our investment strategy, followed by a discussion of recent performance, the portfolio's composition, activity, and our outlook. Before we begin, we're required to provide certain disclosures that can be found at the end of the presentation or provided upon request. This presentation is intended for investment professionals, institutional investors, and qualified investors. The views and opinions expressed by the speakers today are their own as of the date of this recording. These views and the securities mentioned today are subject to change and should not be considered a recommendation to buy or sell any security. Past performance is not indicative of future results. For those of you who are new to the firm and the strategy, I'd like to share a few summary points. The firm is independently owned by active members and manages $1.1 billion, approximately $690 million of which is in this strategy, Concentrated Large Growth. The strategy is led by an investment committee of four members, three of which have managed the portfolio since its inception in 1998. There are two primary objectives of the strategy. First, to generate consistent excess returns, and second, to effectively manage risk. At the core of our process are three distinct practices that explain our performance and differentiate the strategy. First, a process that emphasizes stable growth. Second, a focus on long-term secular themes that support and sustain growth. Finally, portfolio construction guidelines that seek to manage risk. The result is a high conviction concentrated portfolio of 25-30 stocks, low turnover of 25%-30%, active share of 80%-90%, and risk characteristics such as beta, standard deviation, and downside capture that are typically below the benchmark. Moving to the presentation, let's go to slide three, titled Recent Results and Outlook. Given the market's sharp October correction, third quarter returns seem like very old news, so I'll begin with a few comments on the sell-off and add some context. Key areas of focus have been interest rates, growth, and trade. On October 3rd, Fed Chair Jerome Powell talked about rates being a long way from neutral. In response, the 10-year spiked approximately 25 basis points, and equity markets corrected 8%-12% over the balance of the month, giving back most of the year's gains. While rates remain well below long-term average, the catalyst for the sell-off, at least in part, was the rate of change. Rates have since stabilized. While consensus estimates for the S&P 500 earnings growth are 22% in 2018, they're approximately 10% in 2019. Keep in mind that the 22% in 2018 are somewhat inflated by the lowering corporate tax rate. Clearly, the earnings growth are decelerating but remain above the long-term average of approximately 8%. There's some optics involved here. Here again, it's the rate of change that creates the sense of uncertainty. With some hindsight, valuations towards the end of the quarter were obviously high. They are more reasonable now. Trade is more of a wild card and bears watching. Until recently, these policy conflicts have been broadly viewed as negotiating tactics, but we are a little bit less sanguine on this front and are avoiding exposure where we can. 10% corrections are not uncommon. Our view is that we're transitioning from a liquidity-driven market to a fundamentally driven market, and that positive economic fundamentals continue to outweigh elevated risks. Our response in periods such as this is to remain disciplined on risk management and upgrade the portfolio positions opportunistically. Turning to third quarter results, returns of 9.1% were right in line with strong gains from the benchmark Russell 1000 growth index of 9.2%. We're going to provide some more details in an attribution slide later in the presentation. If you turn to slide four, as we look at our longer term returns, we're very pleased with the mid-teens returns over the 1, 3, and 5 year periods. Pleased with them on an absolute basis, but somewhat disappointed on a relative basis. Note our performance has been more in line with the broader market as reflected by the S&P 500 and the Russell 1000 growth index. This is primarily a result of our decision to remain disciplined on evaluation and diversification through the latter part of a cycle that has really been dominated by a very narrow group of expensive stocks. We continue to believe this is a prudent position to take when you think in terms of a full market cycle. It was certainly beneficial over the course of the last month. Slide five gives a sense of attribution for the third quarter. For the benchmark, technology and healthcare led, energy and communication services were the weakest sectors in the bench for the benchmark. For the portfolio, healthcare and the newly formed consumer services holdings were a source of relative strength, while energy and financials were primary sources of relative weakness. Top stock contributors included O'Reilly, which has continued to reaccelerate on a same store basis and has effectively answered some of the threats that were posed by Amazon earlier in the year. Lonza Group, which provides active pharmaceutical ingredients to the biotech industry, has continued to experience strong end market demand. And Apple has continued to see strong growth in its services business, and with a rollout of several new phones and other products has done quite well. Primary detractors included Facebook, which in the second and third quarter faced increasing concerns around privacy and regulation. So the company has been spending at increased rates to address these issues. Enbridge suffered from some of the weakness in the energy sector. And then Charles Schwab was impacted by increased competition within the industry on fees. If we turn to slide six, we'll get a sense of the portfolio longer term. This slide is titled Selection and Allocation. On the left-hand side, you see our top 10 positions, how long we've owned them, what the weighting was at the close of the period, and then sector allocation versus the benchmark on the right. A couple points I think particularly relevant given the recent market sell-off. If you look at our top 10 positions, I'd like to highlight a couple that are unique, I would say, less household names, names like Cooper, which is a contact lens company, Lonza, which I just mentioned, providing pharmaceutical ingredients to the biotech industry. And then Verisk, which is categorized as an industrial, but is essentially a data analytics service company providing information to both the insurance industry as well as the energy industry. With regard to sector allocation, our largest sectors in the portfolio remain information technology and healthcare. Our largest overweight is healthcare. Our largest underweight at the close of the quarter was communication services. On slide seven, you see something that's titled Active Bets, and this is essentially how we're invested differently than our benchmark. This is an important slide in terms of highlighting where we've allocated capital to be into our highest conviction ideas and that are allocated differently than our primary benchmark. As the market's broadened out, particularly over this last month, we've certainly benefited from what I would say are very crowded bets in what has been termed the FANG group of stock, Facebook, Apple, Amazon, Netflix, Google, Microsoft, et cetera. Here, our largest bet at the close of the quarter was not being in Amazon. even though this has been something of a detractor until late, valuation was our primary concern there. But also to highlight some of the other names, some of which I mentioned before, Cooper and Lonza, as well as more stable names like Fiserv and Sherwin-Williams. Slide 8, we talk a little bit about market breadth. So one of our concerns through this cycle has been an increasingly concentrated benchmark where this handful of names termed FANG constituted a larger portion of the index. So in the bar chart on the top, you'll see the gray bars show you how much this group of six names constituted the overall benchmark. So in 2013, this group was 13% of the capitalization of the benchmark. This increased 27% of the benchmark through the third quarter and has increasingly described or accounted for almost half of the returns year to date through 2018. I think what's interesting is this dynamic has started to unwind. In the first quarter, this group of stocks accounted for 77% of the returns. In the second quarter, 57%. In the third quarter, 35%. As we look at October, it will clearly be a detractor for one of the primary detractors for the benchmark. So this has been a concern of ours. We think generally speaking, this unwinding and seeing more breadth in the market is a very positive thing. On slide 9, we give you some specific historical examples of how we have managed to preserve capital through drawdown periods. And drawdown periods are defined as peak to trough performance. And what we've done here is we've looked at both on an annual basis and then on the largest periodic basis drawdowns for this strategy. So if you look at the top table, you'll see the most difficult period for the strategy was in 2008 on an annual basis, and then 2002, 2000, 2001. And then for the largest absolute drawdown periods, you'll see in the bottom table, the worst period being 42% from during 2008 and the first part of 2009. So if you look at this second table, what you'll see is on average, we've preserved about 275 basis points versus our benchmark. But in each of these periods, the strategy is outperformed either on an annual basis or on a large drawdown basis in the bottom table. This is key in terms of how we think about managing this strategy. We view this again as something to address full cycles, which includes both up periods and down periods. We want to participate in the up periods as well as preserve capital on the down periods. We can't avoid, drawdowns during really tough environments, but preserving a certain percentage of that is really where this strategy adds value. In terms of addressing specific risks in the market, interests in trade are top of everyone's minds right now. And so we've performed analysis on the portfolio. And here is to really know to get a sense of where our bets are and what kind of factors we're exposed to. And so what we've done on slide 10 in the top bar chart is looked at the correlation of our names to the 10-year yield. And here, our assumption is that interest rates and the yield will continue to rise over time, hopefully in a more gradual fashion than it did when Chair Powell spoke at the beginning of the month. But anyways, if you look across the spectrum, the way to read this is that a name like Charles Schwab on the left would be have the highest positive correlation to rising interest rates, which would mean historically it has risen alongside rising interest rates. And then American Tower, having negative correlation, would, given the historic precedent, be impacted by rising interest rates. What is interesting about particularly the October correction is that the opposite has been the case. The correction through accident of timing or otherwise started with a spike in interest rates. But if you look at over this period, Charles Schwab has underperformed and American Tower has outperformed. And what that implies is that the market is really focused on very defensive names and has put, has considered a secondary factor, the interest rate sensitivity. That being said, taking a longer term view, we do think monitoring the correlation with interest rates is key and really being aware of where the factor risks lie. And then finally on trade, this has generated a lot of headlines. So we've spent a good bit of time looking at the revenue exposure of our portfolio holdings. So the way to read this is on the left-hand side, you've got in descending order companies like Charles Schwab and O'Reilly, which have 100% U.S. revenues, on down to Albemarle, Amphenol, Apple, and others, which have a larger component of international sales. And specifically here, I'd look at the fourth column, which highlights the China exposure of portfolio holdings. Here, our largest exposure is Amphenol, and our second largest exposure is Apple. The goal here is to make sure that we have a clear idea of what kind of exposure we have to this risk and that the positions are appropriately sized within the portfolio. Specifically with regard to these holdings, Amphenol is a highly diversified electronic connector company. And that figure is somewhat skewed by the fact that a lot of their manufacturing is actually done in China, where they have direct sales there. So thus far, they've been immune to any trade sanctions, or largely immune to any trade sanctions. And then Apple as well has been excluded so far. But again, we think it's important to understand where these risks lie. So that concludes the review of the prepared slides, and we'd be happy to take any questions.
We'll now open the call for questions. If you are at your computer, please type your question into the question box on the webinar control panel. If you're having trouble finding the question box, you might need to expand your control panel by clicking on the red arrow. We'll pause now to compile questions. We had our first question come in. Question is, were you surprised to see financials as the worst contributing sector given the rising rates and the positive effect that should have on the sector?
I'll make a first comment if anybody wants to jump in on this as well. I think rates have been volatile, but they've really been capped at sort of the 305, 310 level to 330. And we did have a spike following Powell's comments, and then they largely flattened out since then. So with regard to interest rates specifically and the beneficial impact that they have on profitability of financials in general, they've been subdued. Lending has also been pretty modest, particularly in the C&I space. So I think, I think some of that may be an indirect impact of some of the trade concerns and conflicts where corporations are hesitant to borrow to make capital expenditures. I know.
And one thing I would add, Nicholas, is that, as the short-term rates are rising, long-term rates are not rising commensurately. So you're having a flattening of the yield curve, and many of these financial institutions essentially borrow short-term rates, lend long-term rates. And so, I think that they would certainly like to see the long-term rates come up. And that's something that they haven't seen yet.
Great. Let's move on to the next question.
Next question came in is, how have your company, or how have the companies you hold been affected by the tariffs?
So I would say we are 60-70% through the earnings season so far, and with regard to the third quarter results, not at all. But I would say that it has factored into some cautious statements from a couple of the companies that we hold, but it really hasn't played out so far. The size of the current $250 billion trade sanctions that have been outlined so far is not large relative to the overall economy and trade in general for the U.S. Our longer term concern, again, is some of the rising prices, input costs, hesitancy on CapEx side, but we have not seen any material impact thus far.
Great. And it looks like we have one more question here. Over the past 6 months, we've seen quite a shift in the markets. What do you attribute this to? And do you think it is sustainable or something more short-lived?
So I do think, we've had several false starts to a meaningful rotation within the market. I do expect this is something that will continue. It's just the breadth or the lack thereof in the market is just not sustainable to have half a dozen companies generating three quarters of the returns of the index, and valuations were extended. I think given the fact that growth is moderating, interest rates are rising, what was a synchronized global growth picture now has really been isolated to the U.S. in terms of strong economic background. I think the fundamentals are coming to the forefront, and the breadth of the market is reflecting that. So I think that those factors are much more durable and will continue to broaden out the market. So I think this is a sustainable kind of change in the dynamics of the market. Okay, so seeing no more questions, we'll wrap up there. And again, I want to thank everybody for joining us and wish you a happy Halloween. And we'll talk to you next quarter.
This concludes the third quarter 2018 update.